Today's daf is daf Yudchet in Masechet Sanhedrin. And we're about to close the first parak, which is Dinei Mamonot B'Shlosha. We're holding on the last line on Yud Zayin Amud Beit. So if you look back in your Mishnah, you'll see that there's the Shita of Rabbi Nechemiah, who instead of following the number of people that are required for Sanhedrin based on the practical considerations of how many would support a Sanhedrin, he learns, Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, 230 keneged sorei asorot. So he holds that the chashivut of the Sanhedrin is that you have to have each member over there being also a sar of asara. And so, Mamela, you need to have now 23 Asiriot. So each one of them would be a Sar of Asara. Therefore, there needs to be 230. Now, it's not clear whether we're talking about a total of 230 or 230 besides the Beit Din. That depends on whether we see the Sar Asarot as being part of the Asarot, which we're about to see in the Gemara. In any event, it's interesting that we have yet another Shita in the Braita, Tanya, Rebbe, Omer, Matayim, V'Shiv'im, V'Shiv'ah. He holds you need 277, because he says, in principle, Rebbe Nechemiah is correct, so that the 23 is really 23 times 10. However, you have to worry that you're going to need to be Mosif al Hadayanim. And if you're Mosif al Hadayanim, then that means you need to have an additional 47 in all the order to be able to continue to be Mosif to the maximum. The maximum would be 70, because that would be the size of Sanhedrin Gedolah. You're never Mosif above that, but you need to have enough to be Mosif. Problem is that we find a Braita which Rebbe says, Matayim Shivim Vishmon, not 277, but 278. And that, of course, we know the answer to that, Lokasha. One is Alibid Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the Beit Din HaGadol is 70. And one is Alibid Rabbanan, that holds that it's 71. And 71 would bring us to 278. Tana Rabbanan. V'samta aleihem sarei alafim, sarei meod, sarei chamishim, v'sarei asarot. So the vision that Yitro had was of setting up a system of sarut in Israel, this being part of his description of the creation of Botei Dinim, is the basis of Rabbi Nechemiah saying that clearly you needed to have a minimum of sarei asarot that would be functional on the lowest level of the Beit Din in the city, which would be the Beit Din of Esrim Shlosha. But now if you analyze the way in which it's structured over here, points out the Braita, that would mean that the Sarei Alafim for the number of people that were in the census would have been 600, because there were 600,000. The Sarei Me'od would be Sheshet Alafim. Sarei Chamishim would be 12,000. And the Sarei Asarot would be Shishim Ribu. 60,000 times 10 is 600,000, which would mean Nimtzu Dayanei Yisrael Shivat Ribu Ushmonat Alafim V'Shesh Meod, which gives us a total of 70,000, 8,000, and 600. Now there's something fundamentally screwy about this, as Tosfos points out, because on each level, if you're considering the Sarim, and you take them out of the Cheshbon, you've now messed up the Cheshbon of the next level, because you have to take out the number of the Dayanim. So, I mean, there's a number of different approaches to this. Tosfos suggests that it's possible that the Dayanim on the highest level weren't included in the count because they may have been older than 60. And therefore, the count, which was dafka for the Anshei Tzava, that there were royal lotzes the tzava, was bin ben esrei, mad ben shishim. It's like we talked about people that may have survived the Midbar experience who were not in the count. But it's also possible, that of course would change everything, lagabi, the size of the city. It's because then that would mean that the number of dayanim would be besides the people. Although on the lowest level, which would mean we'd multiply 23 times 10, but that would mean that the Beit Din was outside of the 230, according to that. So it would be, each one would have 230 people, another 10 people under them, so that each Beit Din would have 230 people besides the Beit Din. It's a little difficult to believe because Reb Nechemia was coming, after all, as an alternative to the other approach of the Mishnah. In the other approach of the Mishnah, we were counting the number of people logistically that were required. If he means outside of that, then he couldn't have simply said, no, it's not 120. It requires the full Sarei Asarot. I mean, then he should have added the whole thing to give us the sum total. But it's also possible, as Tosafot suggests, that maybe we're not talking about the number of Dayanim. We're talking about the number of Dayanut. So that in other words, we start at the bottom. Out of those who were selected to be the Sarei Asarot, some of them were choshev enough to also be the Sarei Meot. Out of them, some were choshev enough to be the Sarei Alafim. So that we're not adding people, we're adding positions. You get an additional salary for being the Sarei Asarot. If you're also a Sarei Meot, and so on. So it becomes a pyramid of positions rather than of Dayanim, in which case it's Bechlal no kasha, that it's not included. Each one is included. We don't lose the number of people by taking them out as Dayanim. We're talking about Mispar Aserarut, and not Mispar Dayanim. Correct. He has different levels of responsibility. In other words, you can imagine that there's a local justice of the peace who is also selected, so to speak, as the county, he may be the county judge, and they took him on to the Supreme Court. It doesn't mean he loses his previous srara. He serves in different positions. You can easily see that in a civil situation. Hadron alav dinei mamanut b'shlosha lin edher. Find on the helik aperik. I don't know. This is the age is taking its toll here. Find on the helik aperik. Kohen gadol dan v'danimoto. The perek begins here with really the conclusion that we were speaking about before, because we had just gotten into the issues of dvarav shel gadol. And we talked about what's unique about the requirements at the end of this perek, the first perek, the unique requirements for being dan, someone who was nasi shevet, kohen gadol, melech. So we spoke about the requirements for a beit din of shivim v'achad. Memela, once we do that, we already move on here as a little bit of a tangential issue to discuss other elements of dvarav shel gadol. So a kohen gadol was an example of what would be requiring a special beit din. So first of all, such a kohen gadol can judge, so he can become a member of Sanhedrin, he's done, and danimoto, and it's not considered to be in any way a pchitut kvodo, to drag him into court. He's no different than anybody else. Me'id u'me'idinoto. Furthermore, he gives testimony. Now, this is a little bit interesting, because we do know that there's a concept, even when it comes to saving money for another person. You see his aveda. But if it's a zaken ve'nolefichvodo, so he doesn't do the mitzvah. It's v'italam tamir. So why wouldn't we apply that into the covenant of the Kohen Gadol, where the edut in question was an edut maybe for 10 cents that somebody owes someone else, and say that to take the Kohen Gadol into court to provide that edut may be begeder. I mean, is that more choshev than being meshiva vidato? So first of all, the Gemara is going to discuss all this, but first of all, Tosafot points out there is the possibility that we were talking about me'id, he may be a reference to edus achodesh, for instance. In other words, there's nothing to tell us that it's specifically about an issue of mamon, which is might be shelo lefich vado, and then would be begedev yitalamta. Tosafot rejects that because the fact is that the Mishnah is not mechalek. The Mishnah simply says me'id, which would imply under any and all circumstances. So the questions of kavod of the Kohen Gadol in types of edut that seem to be a miut of his kavod, the Gemara is going to address in a very interesting way, as we'll see. But certainly, in principle, he would be able to be in Beit Din for Eidut. It's certainly since Danimoto, we'd have to be Meidimoto. As a matter of fact, it seems almost redundant, and the Gemara is going to ask that as well. Cholitz, now he can do Chalitza, despite the fact that in doing Chalitza, yes, you're in front of him. But Choletz and Chotzin Leishto, and Miyabin at Ishto, if he dies, the only thing is, who ino Miyabin? He can never be Miyabin, his brother's wife, because his brother's wife, to be able to be a Yevama, obviously is also an Almanah. But a Kohen Gadol is Asur an Almanah. So Mipadeshu Asur Balmanah is not Miyabin. Now this looks obvious, but it's not so pashut at all. Because how about if she is an Almanah from Erusin and is still Chayevet in Yibum? Would that also make her an Almanah to make her Asurana Kohen Gadol? She's still a Betula. Okay, this the Gemara is going to discuss. Mate lo mate. Now, if a member of the family dies, upon whom he has a chiyuv of avelut, eno yotzei achar hamita, he doesn't follow the funeral procession. Ela, what is done is hein nichsin v'hunigle. As the funeral procession now turns the corner to go down another street, he then turns the corner into the original street, so to speak. So he's always not visible to the people in the procession. He doesn't see the procession. They turn again, then heiniglin, unichse. So it's constantly that he's one street behind, and he will only follow the funeral procession, v'yotzei imahen ad petach shahar a'ir, only until the exit from the city, because once you leave the city, there's no place to hide. I mean, then you're already on the open road, so there's no way for him to be nichse from them. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Yotzei Min HaMikdash. This is not true. He doesn't leave the Beit HaMikdash at all, not even when it's in the city, to be on a street that may be behind. Mishum Shneemar, Umin HaMikdash Lo Yetzei. So it's Mashman, he should not be Yotzei at all from the Beit HaMikdash. There it says, Min HaMikdash Lo Yetzei, Velo Yechalel Et Mikdash Eloav. Even though there's no Isser of Tumah at all. Now the Ramban says all of this. Sorry?
And there's no Isser for him to leave the Mikdash.
Of course not. Right. It would only be begetter an expression of Avelut. Says the Ramban that Be'etzem, these are, first of all, Rabbi Meir. What does he do? Rabbi Meir understands not min HaMikdash, but rather from Kiddushato. Eno Yotzei. In other words, we are makbid on him not to be in a position where he may accidentally be exposed to the mate. He may become emotionally distraught, maybe get too close, and so on, or go under a tree where the mita is passing. That's how Rabbi Meir understands it. But both pshatim, says the Ramban, are really silsulim, that the Rabbanan were kiveya on the Kohen Gadol. That he, I mean, obviously he could physically leave the Beit HaMikdash. So that is mafsik is avoda. So that these are, this is really an esmachta. Uchishavu min achim acherim. Now he comes to be Menachem, the Avel, in the Shura, after the burial. So now, this has nothing to do with him. He is outside of the Beit HaKvarot, they have finished the Kvura for some friend of his, and now he's being Menachem. So the norm is, Derech Kol Ha'am Ovrim B'Zeh HaZeh. So the people always will walk by where they're going to walk by the Avel, but what he does is he's placed in the middle between the Mimuneh, and that's the Sagan, and the Sagan is Mimatz'o, Beino Levein Ha'am. So the Sagan now makes it that the Kohen Gadol is walking with the Sagan on one side, to his right, and the rest of the people on his left, and he is in the middle as a sign of Kavod, and that's the way that they pass in front of the Avel. Uchshu mitnachem mi'acherim, some have v'chein. In other words, if this part is also a reference back, furthermore, this would be done that we would be mematze him, b'derech kavod, and not that he's exposed directly to the people, but that the mumune is always mematzea between him and the people. Me'acherim. But the pashtus of the Mishnah is that this is a different piece, and it simply is explaining what it is that people will say to him when he's the Yava. Kishuhu mitnachem me'acherim, kol ha'am omrim lo anu kaparatcha. Everyone who passes by says to him, whatever Chas V'Shalom was roy to come on you as a tzara, we should be your kapara, we should be in your place. So this is what a child says about a parent. Ani kaparat mishkavo, they say to the Kohen Gadol. V'hu omer lahem titborchu min hashamayim. And he tells them, you should be mevurachon, and not chas v'shalom that anything should happen to you. U'kishemavarim oto, when they bring him the su'udah that is normally brought to the avel, it's improper for him to be sitting on the ground and everybody else to be sitting normally, which is what is done in a normal avel's house. Instead, kol ha'am misubim al ha'aretz, everyone who is there with him sits on the ground, v'hu meisev al ha'safsal, and he sits on a small stool as the avel is wont to do. Ha'melech, all of this is as far as the Kohen Gadol is concerned. However, the melech, lo dan v'lo danim oto. Now we will see that this is not really mi'ikra din. Obviously, one of the main functions of a melech is that the melech is done. So that what happened is this actually became a gezeira on Malchus Yisrael as opposed to the Malchus of Beis David, because they were violent, and when they were dragged into court, there was often very serious consequences to the court not doing what they wanted. And therefore, they made a takana that they're not going to bring such a king into court. Once you can't bring the king to court, then the king can no longer be a judge. Because someone who is not judgeable is not capable of being a judge. You have to first take care of yourself, then you can take care of other people. And if you can't be taken care of, then obviously you have no right to judge. Lo me'id, lo me'idin oto. And he cannot testify, and we don't testify against him. Again, obviously, if lo danim oto, then l'chor, it's clear, what would be the point of me'idim oto if he can't be brought into court at all? Lo choletz v'lo chotzid le'ishto. He does not do chalitza, because that requires to him to be spit at. V'lo chotzin le'ishto, because of the kavod ha-malchut. The Pirush Aliva, some of the Rishonim, including according to the Kesef Mishnah, possibly the Rambam. Rashi simply says it's not clear what he means. He says because an almona of a melech is not allowed to get married. Therefore, lo chotzin le'ishto. Now, some learn that that means that what's the point of doing chalitza? She can't get married anyway, as we're going to see. She's not ruya lahed yot. That would imply, however, that there's no mitzvah chiyuvit of chalitza, and that if you don't want chalitza, then there's no issue in doing it, which is certainly possible. Others suggest that what Rashi is saying is that since she can't get married, so therefore she's not choletzet, because the klal is that only someone who could have yibum is chayevet in chalitza. But if there's no yibum, then there's no requirement for chalitza. Okay, yeah, that's already a little bit debatable as to its application here, because of the fact that it's not an iser in the din of nisuin bichlal. Lo miyabim, because of the kavod hamachud, v'lo miyabim leishto, because she's asura to anybody else. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now wait a minute, we're talking about over here about a very important mitzvah. Im ratza lachlotzo liyabim zachur letov. If in the context of a mitzvah, he wants to be exposed to being spit out, or he wants to do yibum, so then that's a mile. It's a beautiful thing that the king doesn't have any sense of his own dignity in the presence of a mitzvah. We'll see here what the machlokas is, the dinim of Kovan HaMelech in the Gemara. Amrulo and the Chachomim said, Ein Shomimoto, Ein Shomimlo, despite the fact that that's what he wants, we don't allow him to do that. The Indos in Almanato, if he dies, his Almana, not in the case where she's an Amana, who is also a Yavam Lashuk, obviously means he dies and leaves an Almana where he has children. Nobody's allowed to marry that Almana. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, well, it's not quite true that nobody is allowed. No se ha-melech, almanatosha melech, clearly a king can marry the Almana of another king. She came Matzino b'David. We do find that David, after all, married Ritzpa Bataya. Shenasa amanato shel Shaul, sheneemar vetna lacha et beit adonecha, vet neshe adonecha bechekecha. Find that Kadosh Baruch Hu says beferush to David that I gave you the wife of the one who was your adon, meaning Shaul. Says the Gemara, Kohen Gadol dan. Why in the world would a Kohen Gadol not be dan? I mean, it's certainly not in any way a pchitut of the kavod of the Kohen Gadol to be a member of the court? That's pshita, no? Well, it is, but danimoto it's trichale. Isn't that also pshita? Anami pshita. I mean, how could he possibly be done if the ilo dainin alei iu hechi dain? If he's done, so then obviously, I mean, we can be danoto, because it does say, hit koshishu v'koshu, first make sure that you are in good shape, and then you can deal with other people being in good shape. So if he wouldn't be suitable for nidon, then he wouldn't be suitable for dan either. V'amre shlokish, that means kashet atzmecha, v'acharkach kshot acherim. Make yourself decorated by decency, and then you can try to comment on other people. Ela'ayde dekaboy lemitne melech lo dan v'lo denimato, the truth is there's no chiddush for the Kohen at all. But because we need to say in the Mishnah that the Melech is not done, which is a chiddush, because we're not danimoto, tananami Kohen Gadol dan v'danin. So therefore, in order to keep the Mishnah in parallel, we speak about the dinim of the Kohen Gadol. Now this is a bit confusing, because obviously there is the two things together are in fact the chiddush. I mean, what would be the din if we can't don him? Then he wouldn't be able to be don. You're saying each thing is poshut, but one is poshut based on the other. So many of the Rishonim suggest that the element of a Kohen Gadol being done is not just the Svara. It's clear from so many psukim. I mean, Ubatayla Kohanim, Ashofet, Sheyeba Yimayim. It's obvious that one of the primary functions of the Kohuna is Sifsei Kohen Yishmudat, Vitori Vakshumipiyu. So therefore, it's a given. If that's a given, then the fact that he could be Nidon is also a given, as we'll see in a moment. And some may, because of these koshu v'koshu, and therefore, the underlying reason for writing in the Mishnah is not at all clear. V'i bayit ema, or it could be that there's a chiddush hakamash from Giretanya. Kohen gadol shaharag et hanefesh b'mezid neharag. Kohen gadol who has killed someone and is a murderer is put to death in court. Bishogeg gola. And if he murdered accidentally, he goes into galut. V'over ala seva lota se. That this is very strange, it seems to be saying. And in doing so, or in general, a Kohen Gadol is over on an asay and a lotas. The Gemara is going to say, is there a problem if he isn't over on an asay and a lotas? What does that mean? Vareu kediot l'chol dvarav, and is treated like a regular person in every sense. So all of this is going to be explained. Certainly on the surface doesn't seem to make much sense. So let's take it from the beginning. B'mezid ne'erag, a Kohen Gadol who kills is put to death in court. Isn't that obvious? I mean, is there any specific quarter given to anyone in the Torah that he's outside of the dinim of the Torah? Pshita, obviously he's put to death. No, well, the chiddush is that b'shogeg he is said to be ir miklat. Now that is a chiddush. It is? Anami pshita. It's not so pashut. Because remember that going into galut is itself dependent on the Kohen Gadol. Right? And you don't get out of Galut until the Kohen Gadol dies. And now he's the Kohen Gadol. This is a very problematic situation over here. Because Saka Daita Chamina, I certainly could have thought that Hoel Vichtiv, since it does say in the Torah that he goes to the Ir Miklat, V'yashav Ba'admot HaKohen HaGadol, so he's supposed to stay there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. But if the Kohen Gadol dies, he's not going to get out of Galut, because then he's not alive. So I might have thought, the point of Galut is to give someone a kapara, and then he goes back to his normal life. But someone who, by definition, can never get back to his normal life, so perhaps the whole din of Galut doesn't apply to him. But the let leitakanta bechazara, if there's no way for him to get back to his life, lo legally, maybe the Torah never provided the din of Galut for such an individual. Ditznan. Ha'horei Kohen Gadol. We do have such a situation. Somebody kills the Kohen Gadol. So he kills the Kohen Gadol, and he's put into Galut before now the appointment of another Kohen Gadol. O Kohen Gadol, Shaharagat Anefesh, Eino Yotze Bisham Leolam, will never get out. So therefore, Imalo Ligla, he shouldn't go into Galut at all. Kamash Balan comes along the mission to tell me, the bright ear to tell me, that nonetheless, the Kohen Gadol is like anybody else, and b'mezid, he's killed, obviously, but even b'shogeg, he goes into galut. Maybe it's indeed true. In other words, how do we know that that's the case? It sounds like a pretty good understanding of the pasuk that it's dependent in the yitzia. Here you're saying the chiddush is that's not true, but how do you know that's not true? We would appoint a new Kohen Gadol. If we appointed a new Kohen Gadol before the Gemar Din, so then in a chinami, the new Kohen Gadol would, but that's not always the case. We don't put off the Din, but Lamaisa, if there's no appointment of the other Kohen Gadol, so then we're stuck, because there's no Din. If we appoint a Kohen Gadol later, the death of that Kohen Gadol does not release a person who's in Galut. So ask the Gemara, perhaps that indeed is true, the Ema Achinami. Get that? Kol Rotzeach includes Afilu Kohen Gadol b'mashma. Brayta continues, Over al asei ve'alot aseh. Now, what is that supposed to mean? You mean it's not good enough that the Kohen Gadol has got to be over on an aseh and an alot aseh? What does this mean? Lo sagi de lo avar. No, man, you're reading it wrong. This is a different piece. Hachikomar. Im avar, la seva lotase. If he had, forget about murder, anything at all, and I say, a lotase, he's treated like anybody else. Arehu kehed yot l'chol davar. He's like anybody else, and he's dragged into court and beaten in court and so on and so forth. And if a Beit Din has to beat him to get him to do a mitzvah, they'll beat him to do a mitzvah, I say. So he's not like any different. Well, pshita, why would he be? Because Salkadatech Amina. I'll tell you why. Getting back to the previous parak, remember what it said in the opening Mishnah. Vitznan. Ho Vitznan. Ein danin lo et hashevet, velo et navi hasheker, velo et kohen gadol. Ela al pi beit din shel shivim ve'echad. And what was the basis of that? That you need a beit din of shivim ve'echad? Because the Omer of Adabar Ava, we learn it out from Kol Hadavar Hagadol Yavio Elecha. And we understood that to mean Divarav Shel Gadol. And who is the Shel Gadol? The Kohen Gadol. So I might have thought Kol Hadavar Hagadol means Kol Divarav Shel Gadol. We actually discussed this earlier in terms of the Dine Mamanut of the Kohen. What would be the din? But I mean, certainly I might have thought if you're going to bring him into a dafka bezit shel shivim ve'echad for dinim of mita, so the same thing should be true if we're going to give him dinim of malkut, and we should have to go to the bezit shel shivim ve'echad. But to treat him as a hedyot l'chol davar, that I would say is not true based on the Yitro's original suggestion. So therefore, kamash malan, that's not the case. Says the Gemara, but why isn't it the case? Why wouldn't that be the case? Why not understand kol ha-davar ha-gadol, kol divarav shel gadol? And that it's not true that he would be treated like anybody else. So ema achinami, because look carefully at that pasuk. It doesn't say kol divrei gadol, just kol ha-davar ha-gadol. So there's a double meaning. It's dvarav shel gadol, but it's the davar gadol of the gadol. And the davar gadol of the gadol is a capital case that we would try. So davar gadol mamash is still true.
And not malchus.
And not malchus, right. Me'id u'me'idin oto. Now, the question is, you say that he would be me'id. I mean, why don't we consider the question of eino lefich vodo when it would come to edut mamon? And as Tosis explains, the pashtut of the Mishnah is that it's referring to any type of edut, even an edut mamon. I mean, isn't that included in the din of hita'alamta? V'atanya. V'hita'alamta pa'amim shata mit'alem. The way the Torah phrases the din of hashavat avedah. So it says over there, lo tiret shor achicha, and so on, v'hita'alamta mehem, hashev tashivem. So why does it say vitalamta mayam sort of as a question? Do you think you can pretend that you don't see? I mean, it's a funny way of writing. So we understand that the drasha is that indeed vitalamta. You can, at times, pretend not to see, so to speak, hide from them. Pa'amim shata mitalem. There are times where you would be mitalem. Pa'amim, that you're not allowed to be mitalem. Pa'amim shiata mitalem. Haketzat, what would be the case? Well, for instance, let's say a Kohen sees someone else's shor, v'hu, the shor is b'bet ha-kvarot. Or, it's a zaken, and the thing that he's going to be returning is something that he would generally not be seen being involved with. Ve'ino l'fi chvodo. So himself pick it up for himself, so then he doesn't do that for somebody else? Or in fact, he's going to be losing more money in dealing with this than the person who lost it is going to be losing and is not returning it. All of those cases would be included under vehitalamta. Lekach ne'emar vehitalamta. So how do we explain the fact that we don't take into consideration over here the eino lefich vado of the Kohen Gadol as well? Omer of Yosef, well, maybe it means me'id lamelech. Maybe it's talking about an edut, which is certainly no ziluta, because he's dafka giving edut that is nogea king. So for that, it's not a chisaron to be in court. Abba. Says the Gemara, how could that be? What do you mean? I thought you don't me'id a melech. So, v'atnan lo dan v'lo danimoto, lo me'id v'lo me'idimoto. There is no din of being made a melech. Now, as Tosis points out, we could have simply answered it by saying that we're dealing over here with a melech from Beit David. I mean, the Mishnah we're going to explain in the Gemara is a takona of Malcha Yisrael. But, okay, since that's the topic of the Mishnah, points out Tosfos, it doesn't make sense to have a case of the Kohen Gadol where the Eidus would be on a different melech than the one that the Mishnah's been referring to. So, okay, that's not a good explanation. So what then would be the explanation? Elam Rebizera, maybe it would mean Me'id to a member of the royal family, to the Ben Melech. Ben Melech, what do you think? We're English over here. Prince Charles, Ben Melech is a head yet. But just because the media like to focus on him, I mean, therefore it would have a different din. Sorry. Okay, Me'id Bifnei HaMelech. Maybe it means where the king is a member of the court. Wait a minute. The king isn't a member of the court. Va'in Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin. I thought you said that you can't make the king a member of a court. Now, this is a little strange, because the Mishnah said that. What are we saying? Va'ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin, which is not from the Mishnah. That's a bright. Our Mishnah says, Eino Dan. So why don't we just quote the Mishnah? Va'ein Dan, we just said, right? So Tosfos says, because the Eino Dan I could have understood to mean on his own. But if he's a member of Sanhedrin, so then perhaps the fact that he's with everybody else would be sufficient. So we want to explain that even to have him as a member of Sanhedrin is not appropriate. So again, how could there be a edus of a Kohen Gadol in front of a melech by Sanhedrin, where there's no melech in the Sanhedrin, in which he cannot be made for the Kohen Gadol, and in which a member of the royal family has no specific halachic status? Answers the Gemara, Mishum Yikra, the Kohen Gadol, Ata V'yativ, and Mekablin Yalei L'Saduta. The case would be where, in fact, a Kohen Gadol is required for testimony. So then, in order to prevent a pegia in the covet of the Kohen Gadol, the Melech comes into the Sanhedrin and is treated as if he's a member of Sanhedrin. The Kohen Gadol says over his Edut, and at that point, he, the Melech, leaves, Koihu the Ozil, because he's not allowed to be a member of the Psak, Umayinina le'anan bidine, and then we, in the court, continue now to Paskin, having heard the testimony of the Kohen Gadol.
So they bring in the Melech?
They don't bring in the Melech. The Melech attends, as if he's a member of the...
And that's not a pigia of the Melech, though.
On the contrary, the Melech really ought to be in Sanhedrin.
No, but he's just coming in.
That doesn't matter. We're treating him as if he's a member of Sanhedrin, and then he leaves.
No, so that the Kohen Gadol...
It doesn't matter, but the act itself of being part of Sanhedrin is a mila. It's not a concern.
But don't they raid him? Which, where he's sitting?
Yeah, he sits at the top.
And the other day, he's at the top.
Gufa. In Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin... Now, you quoted a moment ago, we don't put a melech in Sanhedrin. Let's look into that a little bit. We don't put a melech as a member of Sanhedrin. Velo melech kohen gadol bi'ibur shana. And you don't have a melech and a kohen gadol involved in the question of whether the year should be a shana mu'ubarat. Okay, melech b'Sanhedrin, I understand the issues of the Melech B'Sanhedrin. We have Lo Tane Al Riv, Lo Tane Al Rav. It's because we're Derish that you're not allowed to express an opinion against a Rav. If the Melech will say one thing, so then it'll make it difficult for anybody else to change his mind or to argue with the Melech. So we want to keep him out of that kind of situation. Though we said in the Mishnah that the Melech not being done is a din derabbanan, and this issue of Yerloi San Al Riv is a diuraita, the truth is that if he's a member of the Sanhedrin Mamash, so let's say Malchei Beit David, even which even Laloha could be members, over there we don't have a chashash of Lotan Al Riv, according to many Rishonim, because the Melech indeed doesn't say anything in a Dine Nefashot until everybody else speaks. And so there won't be a chashash of Lo Tane Al Riv. But there's still a question, as I mentioned, of changing one's mind. Others taina that that's not really true, because even though when it comes to the Muflis of Sanhedrin, Yermatchem and Atzad, that's within the Sanhedrin, but when it comes to the Melech, it would be a bizayon to be Matchil and Atzad. Others learn that the issue over here is not the question of whether Moshivin Melech Sanhedrin, we say we can't, but whether the Melech could even be present at the time of the Sanhedrin, because he may want to express an opinion. And if he expresses an opinion, we run into trouble. And therefore, the Gemara, in the end, had explained that what we need to do is get him out of the way while we go ahead and paskin. That would give a better explanation for why we get him out of the way rather than he can leave. That would be because they are nogeya in the din. How is that? Melech mishum afsanya. The king has got a budget, right? The longer the year is, the more he gets out of his money. So having established that the budget for this year is X, the army is going to have to make do with X, even though the year ends up being 30 days longer than it would have been before. So he's very happy for the year to be Mu'ubar, so we don't want his input into that process. The Kohen Gadol is very happy for the year not to be Mu'ubar, because then it'll be awfully cold on Yom Kippur, and the mikveh is going to be chilly, says Rashi. Tosfos says, the mikveh is not going to be chilly, we warmed the mikveh. Right. The stone floor is going to be chilly. And, you know, people have a tendency to be a little bit bent in their judgment by all types of things that you think were not all that important. So because of that, we don't allow him into this din.
Even though it's so far away, he still
thinks about it. Oh, yeah, those toesies get cold, let me tell you. Omer Rav Papa. So you see from here, says Rav Papa, Shmamina, Shata Batar Yarcha Azil, that the year ends up being, obviously he figures it's going to be cold, ends up being according to what the months would have been had we not been Mahabharat. In other words, it's not, the temperature is not going to be taken into consideration in the ideas of whether we should be Ma'aber the Shana or not. So that we're going to affect the seasons, which is interesting because certainly a major issue is making sure that the seasons, the solar seasons, are going to be hand in hand with the lunar months. So you'd think that that would always be a primary concern. But you see from years as Republicans, it's not a primary concern. There's so many other issues that we're going to see later that are involved that you don't in any way jump to the conclusion that because it's a Shnata Yibur, that you're going to end up having a normal temperature that you would have otherwise had. And therefore, it means we don't take that into consideration. Is that true, though? Eini? V'hanech shlosharo e'bakar. There was once a group of three shepherds. And you know, people that are out there in the field, they have all kinds of Groundhog Day myths. And so they had their way of talking about the weather. And the Chachamim overheard them talking about the weather. So they were sitting and talking together in the bar. V'shamina rabbana dekamre. And I hear them talking. Chad Amar, one says, what apparently was sort of a common belief, that im bachir v'lakish kachada yinatz, deinu adar. V'im lav late dein adar. That if we find in this month the early plantings, which is the chita, and the later plantings, which is the seorah, both of them now sprouting then this has got to be Adar. But if not, must still be Shvat. V'char amar, im tor bitzvar bitlag yamut, uvetiara betul te'ena yidmuch yishlach mashchei. If the shor gets up in the morning and freezes in the snow, and in the afternoon it's hiding from the sun in the shade of the te'ena tree and scratching off its skin from being uncomfortably warm, then that's Adar for you, all right. But if not, then this is not Adar. And the other one says, that's not what my grandma taught me. She taught me, V'chadama, im kidum takif lachta, ye yipach b'lo ach nafik l'kible, deinu Adar. If you've got this terrible wind now out of the east, and it's freezing cold, but there's enough in your own lungs to blow out and warm your hands against it, so then this is Adar. But if not, and it's colder than that, it's still Shvat. Anyway, these are like the... So that this is... These were like common expressions. And the Rabbanan heard them talking and were Ma'aber the year. So apparently they took into consideration the fact that these three Roeh Tzon were all commenting on the weather, and that it turned out, according to all of them, this was a Shvat and not an Adar. So they made this Adar Sheni. So it seems that we do very seriously measure things by the weather. Ah, come on. V'tizba, Rabbanan Ara'ut, what do you think? The Rabbanan hang out in the bars in order to decide whether it's Groundhog Day. And then we make up whether we should have a longer winter or not. Come off it. Rabbanan Achush B'nayu Samuch. Just things worked out very nicely. That year, they had their cheshbonot, whatever their cheshbonot are. Their cheshbonot are not only astronomical. There's various other issues that have to do with economics, that have to do with the question of when Yom Kippur comes out, Lagabe Meitim, and so on. So they were semich on that. The Roei Bakar, they were bringing out the fact that, you know what, it's good that it works out also, worked out for the weather. That's all. So Yistayu de Yistayu Miltayu, but it's not saying it's a primary concern. And therefore, it may well be that the Kohen Gadol is worried about the tzitzit. He's not going to think that, well, it'll work out good, because anyway, we're going to have the seasons come out okay. Lav dafka. That's what Rav Papa is pointing out.